Yeah, thank you very much for the introduction. So I am Shinjo Park, and today with my friend Yonghyo Ban, and we are going to have a lecture on learning from the South Korean telco breaches. So yeah, I have a PhD on the cellular network security, and I also have an interest on the telco equipment and also various gadgets. And I'm also working as a Korean translator of various open source projects, including KDE. Well, when I was still younger, then I tried to translate quite a lot of projects. But well, now I have a daily job, and I become a bit older, so I had to stop some of the translation work. And
this is Yonghyo. I'm Yonghyo Ban, and I'm just an embedded engineer, which do security research as a hobby. Thank you.
Yep. So today's talk will be consisting into the following parts. So we are going to give a background information to understand the South Korean mobile market and a brief introduction of how the LTE network is built up. And I will cover the HSS breach of the SK Telecom, which was earlier in this year, and the operator billing breach of the KT, which has been happening in the later half of this year. And we are also covering the security issues of the femtocells and also the voice over LTE, which facilitated the operator billing breach of KT. And then we will conclude the presentation with the Ethermets and recommendations. So the background information have an understand about today's presentation. There are three operators in South Korean mobile telco market. The biggest one is SK Telecom, and the second largest is KT, and the third largest one is LG U+. And their market share is SK Telecom has about 39.3%, KT has about 23.8%, and LG U+ has 19.5%, and the rest 17.4% is consisting of the virtual operators. These statistics have been collected in May of this year, and due to the various incidents and breaches happened in all of those three operators in Korean market, I guess that the statistics may have been changed in the later or this year, or maybe in the earlier next year. So the Korean telco market you will need to pass a KYC procedure, the Know Your Customer procedure, in order to open a new cellular phone contract or even opening a prepaid mobile phone contract. So the KYC is done by validating a personal IDs. Every South Koreans will have their personal numbers assigned from their birth, and we will get a South Korean ID card when we become adults. And validating the personal IDs against the government database is a standard method of the KYC when somebody wants to open a new mobile phone contract. There was a government data center fire in this year, September, and this actually affected the KYC procedure of all the operators. So for a temporary, I don't remember the exact amount of days, but they actually allowed to opening a new cell phone contract without any KYC procedure, given that the KYC procedure could be done inside the later. And this is a fairly new update, and starting from the December 23rd, I think it is just 1 week ago, the face information is also validated when you are opening a new cell phone contract. And this has been never tried in South Korean market, and I believe that there might be some troubles when the things are being implemented. And the KYC procedure could be challenging for non-Koreans, since non-Koreans are not registered obviously in Korean databases. Most of the new devices are often bought through the contract, like not in Germany, where you can go to the nearest Saturn or MediaMarkt and just buy a phone. But still, quite a lot of Koreans prefer to go to the operator store to buy a new cell phone, and which means that operators can obtain the mapping between the IMSI and IMEI, and also the personal identification when they are buying a new mobile phone for themselves. This is also related to the unfair popularity of the eSIM in Korean market, because for the eSIM capable devices, both IMEIs, when they have a physical SIM slot and an eSIM slot, they must be registered to the operators. And both SIM cards also need to be tied to the same person, which disallows one personal SIM card and one corporate SIM card. Then the operator will reject the eSIM usage. And SMS-based two-factor authentication is actually widespread in as an authentication service, despite there have been warnings of solely relying on the SMS for two-factor authentication. And it is frequently used for online personal identification in various services. Koreans may be accustomed to images like this. Then you need to pick on your operator, and they will send on 2FA to verify it is really you. And this procedure is often cited as a barrier for non-Koreans when they are trying to use Korean online services such as shopping malls or just even registering some bigger websites and so on. So to understand some jargons appearing today, this is a simplified structure of an LTE network. The one in the left, the leftmost side is the user equipment. It is typically your mobile phones, and it is connected to your nearest base station via an air interface. Well, in the later part of the talk, where the femtocell will be mentioned, the femtocell is connecting to the operator through a security gateway, and from the security gateway, there will be a home InnoD gateway, and there will be a management system. And the control and data plane will be connected to the S1 MME and the S1U. And the home subscriber server stores all your information required to authenticate a mobile phone user. I had to omit quite a lot of other systems and other interfaces due to the space constraints. But this is just a basic structure which will be required to understand what I am going to present today. So let's start from the SK Telecom's HSS bridge. The portal in here actually has some meaningful context for the Korean culture. We are expecting the act of the bowing not as a gesture for greeting, but also a gesture for a sincere apologies. And this picture has been taken when SK Telecom breach happened, and there has been a press release, and all of their C-level showed up on the camera, and they didn't apologize. So timeline of what happened in the SK Telecom. The initial infiltration and the start of the lateral expansion had been started in August 2021, and there was a BPF door infection on the HSS side in December 2021. More lateral expansion in SK Telecom happened between 2022 and 2025, and this year, 18th of April, around 11 p.m., there SK Telecom have detected an abnormal outbound traffic, which is supposedly carrying the entire copy of their HSS device, HSS database, which means that their entire subscriber records. 5 days after the incident, in 23rd of April, the investigation by a joint government civic committee had been started, and they did an audit on the complete infrastructure of an SK Telecom, and they made three press releases, one in 29th of April, and the other one in the 19th of May, and the final report has been released in 5th of July. And as a result of the breach, the replacement of the SIM cards and also some small customer compensation have been followed. This is a summary of the network structure inside the SK Telecom. The external attacker could reach out to some nodes inside the management network where some of the nodes are exposed to the public internet. Some nodes inside the management network, they are connected to the core network because the core network stores the critical information related to a cellular user subscription, and the core network itself is not directly exposed to the external internet. So an external attacker must infiltrate through a management network in order to go to the core network. So the external attacker did an initial infiltration and lateral expansion throughout the management network, and they managed to found that HSS credentials were stored inside a clear text in one of their management network server, and they were able to access to the core network and steal out all the subscriber information. And throughout an intermediate node inside the management network, it was possible to exfiltrate the HSS record, but the SK Telecom's firewall had managed to catch the action, and the things get published. So The leaked information includes the IMSI, MSISDN, K and OPC number, and what SK Telecom calls as more, but the information is encompassing entire 23 million subscribers. The information itself, it is actually enough to clone a SIM card of a legitimate subscriber, and it was later revealed that the information was not encrypted on the storage. And luckily, there is no evidence of the HS data, which was stolen from the SK Telecom, was being sold in the dark web so far. But well, SK Telecom did the mitigation, and well, I hope that no copy of the data will be available, even in the far future. SK Telecom's mitigation was the binding between the IMSI and the IMEI. So because most of people were going to buy phones from the SK Telecom themselves, so they know the IMSI and they know the IMEI. So they were advertising something called as a using protection service, which enforces the binding between the IMSI and IMEI. It is, well, I personally think that this was a temporary measure until the SK Telecom acquires enough physical SIM cards to replace all of their 23 million subscribers. And they also offered something called using reset service, which was in turn, it was just an IMSI reset service. And to do this, the customer need to visit the SK Telecom store to trigger on over-the-air update or reprogramming of the SIM card on site. And the IMSI will be changed. So one part of the HS data leaked will be invalidated. We also proved that the key was not changed during this procedure by replaying an authentication token before the SIM reset. And we visited SK Telecom and did the SIM reset and replayed the same authentication token after the SIM reset. And we checked that the both tokens were working, so which implies that the key itself had not been changed. The graphic here has been copied from the SK Telecom's website. But interestingly, when we checked their website today, the webpage containing this graphic has been taken down. So I searched for the web archive, and there still is. So please, SK Telecom, you cannot really delete out what you have done in the wrong from the internet as long as the archive.org is still alive. Another mitigation implemented by them was a double authentication. Usually, when a mobile phone is authenticating against the network, the authentication is done only once. But we found that the authentication is done twice in Korean networks. We found that the first authentication request is coming with a smaller number of SQN, and there will be a synchronization failure. And the second authentication, which is the real one, it will continue only when the sequence number is within the expected range, and the second authentication will continue as just normally as the other operators. It looks like that the sequence number has not been breached, and the number itself changes quite frequently depending on the cellular activity, and cloned SIMs cannot have the exact same SIMs SQN numbers. And although the CGPP's authentication procedure mentions that the retrieval of the sequence number is done throughout the authentication, but I think this is a proprietary implementation to always retrieve the SQN regardless of the rest values. And we checked that this kind of mitigation is also implemented in all three mobile network operators. SK Telecom was relatively clear in communication regarding the breach, and the attack model was clear, and the damage was clear from the very beginning. And throughout the time, and SIM replacement became a standard in the political circle. So they are also demanding the other operators when a similar kind of incident happened. And there have been some compensations made, and SK Telecom is increasing the investment on the information security in general. And our Personal Information Protection Commission fined SK Telecom about 134 billion Korean won, which is about 82 million euros in this August. And SK Telecom is actually is considering a lawsuit, citing that the fine is a bit too harsh for us. So the next one is KT's operator billing breach, and again the CC level made a public apology after the breach. Late in August 2025, Pipe, KT users in southwestern part of Seoul reported some unauthorized operator billings, and in 9th of September, the investigation by government had been started, and in 16th of the September, two of the suspects had been arrested. So KT had done press conferences in 11th and 18th of September and 17th of October, and they meet up. They made an initial press release in 6th of November, and just before we are here, they made a final press release. So we had to digest what had been presented, and also we need to update the presentation accordingly. So there was an initial unclarity in the attack model. It could be a malware, but both Android and iOS users were affected, and affected regions were geographically close. So it was actually not a malware activity. Also, some news reports suggested that it could be an event of SMS blaster or Indie Catcher, but the two-factor authentication SMS was hijacked, the SMS was not injected, and billing fraud was reported during the night times, and the KT CDR found some unknown cell IDs, which is actually a contradictory of what the typical indicator or SMS blaster does. So it was also not an SMS blaster activity. And initially, the attack model was not so clear, unlike the SK Telecom's breach, and every press release reported some different numbers of damages. Where their official excuse was that the investigation had been widened throughout the investigation, but the general public lost the patience on what KT was reporting, and what initially exactly was an unidentified cell tower was not disclosed, and also for the word illegal base station, I don't know how and what is exactly illegal, and it was later found out as a modified femtocell. They found that decommissioned femtocell from 2019, which was used in a military installation, but has been decommissioned, and it was used as a donor portal certificate for the further attacks. And about 22,000 subscribers were connected at least once to the modified femtocell, and their identifiers had been compromised. There have been 777 operator billing fraud cases, which is connected to 368 people, and the total fraud amount was 243 million Korean won. It is about 150K euro, which some people can think it is a big, which some people can think it is a smaller amount, given that the sophisticated of the attack. We initially thought that the attack model is eavesdropping through a modified KT's femtocell or third-party femtocell to connect to be configured to use the KT's network, and there might be some voice over LTE implementation weaknesses which facilitates the hijacking of the SMS and voice payload. And it was our hypothesis months ago, and which was actually proven right according to the government press release in today. And Parliament will give the details on what kind of actual attack has been happened.
Yeah, so let's look into the femtocell. So for the background, femtocells are used as a band-aid for the service coverage. Like in South Korea, there is no working VO Wi-Fi setup on all operators, and the operators usually have trouble with the landlord, with their utility bill and the space occupation and etc. And other people also complain about the macro cell installation, about their EMR concern and its ugly appearances, etc. As a result, Korea Telecom deployed it. 232,000 femtocells, and among them, 33,000 units are inactive. Let's look into the femtocell. Femtocell is a home E-node B. It means E-node B in the most untrustworthy place. Let's look, what if the E-node B falls into the malicious person's hand? Usually, home E-node Bs are locked down hard because of their nature. Let's look into the Korea Telecom's femtocell. Yeah, they don't have a root password. And also, their system image is stored in the clear text, no surprise, right? And they hard-coded bootstrapping IPsec certificate in the init RAM disk. Also, they include, as a bonus, they included handy debugging tool for the diagnosis. Like, can you even imagine that Wireshark libraries are included in the FemtoCell? Their only protection is the anti-tampering seal, which is clearly not. And also, it is theoretically not meant to be sale, but in reality, in the surplus market, or the second-hand market in South Korea, it was actively traded. Well, so now let's look into the what can malicious person can do with that. They can access to IPsec tunnel directly coming to the EPC. It means they can access to the S1 user plane link and the S1 MME link to the evolved packet core. And it means malicious person can access the clear text S1 user plane content. And also, each FemtoCell certificate was failed for, decades. And it was reduced to 1 month in this September. And their IPsec certificate management policy became stricter, and including switching down the older certificate management system and allowing only the active FemtoCells can get a new certificate, etc. And however, we were able to get a fresh IPsec certificate for the device. And of course, KT was done in front of the Korea Telecom. They told us, we fixed the vulnerability. So please test it on our network. And I'm saying, oh sure, I'll test it. And after just 30 minutes, I found you again. And they also claimed they fixed it again, and it needs to be verified after I back to home. And so everything is, so nowadays we are in the encrypted world. Everything is inside of TLS and quick protocols nowadays, and VoLTE is usually wrapped in the IPsec tunnel, so nothing should happen, right? Right? So we are launching a world first VoLTE. Are they IPsec ready, really? Answer is no. And in the Qualcomm modem configuration of some Xiaomi phones, the old Xiaomi phones, they have no ciphering and integrity protection for the SIP was applied. And we are not the first ones to discover it. In the 2014, ET News reported the same issue. And telcos told, we fixed the encryption. And the SK Telecom and the LG U+ told most parties to enable the IPsec on the user equipment. But KT didn't. They only told some Korean vendors to turn on the IPsec, and iOS carrier profile did not enable for IPsec for a decade. KT later notified Apple to enable IPsec on IMS, and their carrier profile was updated for iOS 18 and 26. So, problem solved? Right? Let's look into the deeper. Now let's strip the IPsec from the VoLTE. In the Korean, that VoLTE standard, the TTA, the Telecommunication Technology Association VoLTE standard, is broken. In their revision 2, user equipment should not use IPsec when IPsec negotiation failed for some reason. In contrast, in the 3GPP technical specification 33203, section 7.2, if these checks are not successful, the registration procedure is aborted. This statement is still present in the last TTA document, revision 5. Here is the downgrade scenario we used and tested. First, user equipment tries to enable the IPsec using that encryption algorithm AES-DBC, and the hacked eNode B sends that back the SIP 401 with the we don't speak the AES-DBC, let's speak with the some bogus algorithm, and the user equipment thinks the IPsec negotiation failed, and let's just do it with the clear text. And you can see the clear text channel is opened as a result. Here is our test data. The thin client is running a Evolve Packet Core, and the laptop is running a SRS eNode B, and we are and using the software radio with the clock compensation, we were attached commercial UEs to the SRS eNode B and do our test. So here is our test result. For the vendor A, we are not disclosing vendor name for here. The vendor A's Korean model with the Korean SIM card is vulnerable to IPsec downgrade. And the vendor A's, in some telecom operator SIM card, the vendor A's rest of the world or American variant of the device, when you put the Korean, some telco's Korean SIM card in there, it just does not enable the IPsec at all. We were unable to find other vendors in the same problem. And also, some vendor implemented the explicit downgrade vector. When they received the SIP 406 message, they just turned it off the IPsec completely. And as a experimental research, we are injecting the crafted 401 response with the bogus encryption algorithm, and you can see in this packet trace you can clearly see the SIP communication is done in the clear text, and of course the possible mitigations exist. First, the TTA VoLTE standard must be revised to be clear on their weakness on the standard. And the second, the vendor A should deploy updates to their user equipment. And also remember, a single weak point of the chain can break the entire system. And from now on, here is the paramount will do that. Thank you.
Okay, so the aftermath of the vendor breach is happening in South Korea. I also want to give some problems on the media. Yeah, Korean media often uses some sensational terms without any kind of technical insights. For example, for the SK Telecom's breach, everyone mentioned the phone cloning, and for the KT breach, they mentioned image catchers and also SMS blasters, and some of the media even also mentioned 2G only attacks. I want to give a reminder that there was no 2G GSM networks in South Korea, and everything was CDMA back in the 2G era. So the GSM only attacks do not have any meanings in South Korean territory. The extent of the phone cloning can depend on the context. Like when we are just using all the feature phones, then receiving your phone calls and SMS will be counted as a phone cloning. But inside the smartphone world, well, just receiving a phone calls or your data communication usually do not take as a phone cloning. And most of the users will likely be expecting that your user data should be cloned into a cloned device. And I think it is only to cause a fear, uncertainty, or doubt. And the media in general focuses too much on the speed of the report. This is actually often criticized as a problem of the media in general, not only the Korean media, but also from other countries, I guess. And they just relate what operator or government says. And as far as I know, there are not so many specialists in our media culture who do the hard work by analyzing what exactly has been happening regarding the operator speech. And well, as I'm also a translator, I'm kind of picky on what kind of terms have been used. And I believe that the government press release should be easily understandable for everyone, and it also needs to be accurate on the facts. One of the things I want to criticize is that they are describing the CDR as a call data record rather than the charging data record as defined in the CGPP technical standards. And the thing which turned me angry was they were describing the HSS's voice call authentication rather than the home subscriber server. Because of a small twist inside the translation, the importance of each network entities and the actual role of the core network entities could be lost inside the translation. As an expert, we need the usage of the exact technical terms to evaluate the incident. And I also want to say that please do not twist the meaning inside the translation. And you can check the following snippet in the diagram below. I checked it through the Google Translate late today, and you can check whether what I told is right or not. And there was also a PREC report regarding on the South Korean operators, and the PREC number 72 mentions the breaches inside the KT's remote support service and the LGU Plus multi-factor authentication and critical credential management services. And we also got informed that there will be another talk which is related to this topic, the APT down and the mystery of the burning data center, which will be held in 4 p.m. in Zal Zero. And KT claimed that the server in question was decommissioned in the 1st of August, but in reality, they really decommissioned, the decommissioning was continuing after the officially mentioned dates, and there was actually two more times in August for the decommissioning of the server, and they also hide the existence of the backups until the 18th of September. And because of this result, the government initiated a police investigation since October 2025 whether KT had destructed the data just in order to hinder the government inspection. Also, in LGU Plus, they also initially denied the breach, and they even reinstalled the server, which was mentioned as a hacked once, just one day before reporting to the government. Meanwhile, the subcontractor who actually built out the system, they admitted that they were hacked, and they reported the hacking incident even earlier than what LGU Plus did. And the investigation had been started in the October 24th, and LGU Plus kind of denied the breach in September, but they later changed their position in October after the vulnerabilities and the weaknesses had been disclosed, and the police investigation is also initiated. There is an unrelated breach, though. There is an LGU Plus AI call transcription service because the recording of the voice calls are actually quite common practice in South Korea, and usually iPhones do not support the voice recording services. So operators act as a machine in the middle, and they do provide an AI transcription of the voice calls. And in one day, they misconfigured the cache server, which was exposing the metadata of the voice calls for about 36 persons. And an investigation on this issue is also ongoing, as far as I know. So to close our talk today, 2025 was a nightmare in the South Korean mobile network market. Every operators were affected by more or less the similar kind of data leaks and breaches. And we also want to highlight that the cellular network security depends on not only the security of the equipment itself, but also how to configure and how to operate and how to integrate them. As in case of SK Telecom, the lateral prolation was enabled through improper access control. And for the case of the KT, inadequate femtocell security and inadequate implementation of the technical standards actually allowed the, the inadequate security or inadequate voice over LTE might be a part of the exploit chain, but when they are combined into one, then there will be things like the operator billing breach, which was kind of a big event to the KT. And last but not least, let's be transparent in the security incident. Otherwise, everyone will turn against you. And as a result of the breach, South Korean politics have lost their patience in the network operators. And I really hope that our government and maybe the government of governments and the regulators will act accordingly if the network operators are doing some shady things against the people. Thank you, Paulus.
Thank you for this amazing and scary talk, a deeper look into the Korean networks. Is there any questions? There's microphone one and two down in the center lane. If you have any questions, please just come up to the microphones. Signal Angel has a question from the internet.
Thank you for the talk. The internet wants to know that given these breaches and vulnerabilities, which telco provider would you now suggest in South Korea?
the internet asks which operator will be the safest operator, but from judging from my own perspective, There are actually none, and we Koreans are saying that our personal private information will be traded in just less than €1. So everyone just gave up on the security of the personal information. And I really don't think that the status quo will be improved unless there are some stronger measurements from the regulator side, or some technical standards from CGPP or GSMA have been revised to enforce the stricter security on the operators.
Okay, thank you. There's a question at microphone two, please.
Okay.
Yeah, you had one slide where you showed A, B, and C. Was it the operators or was this the telecom infrastructure providers? Because you mentioned that they have in the rest of the world.
This one?
This one.
For the vendor A, the mobile phone vendors, the Korean, they produce the three variants of the model, for the Korean model and the American model and the rest of the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it means that for the Korean market, they had a version where this IPsec was switched off.
Yeah, for the Korean, when you put the Korean SIM card in the Korean model, the IPsec is enabled, but it can be downgraded to no security.
Thank you.
Another question from the internet, please.
The internet wants to know, how common is it to find abandoned femtos, and is the one you showed especially bad, or are they all like this around the world?
Okay, so the internet wants to know about the abandoned femtocells. Yeah, Parliament mentioned that in the case of KT, there was about 43K of abandoned femtos. And after the incident happened, the KT wants to actively recollect the abandoned femtos. And from what I heard from today, about 12K of the femtos has been recollected. And we also, some of our friends also received the message that the KT wants to collect all the femtos. So I think that the femtocells may decrease in the number in the future, but I still think that there might be some hideouts. And could you please repeat the second question?
The second part is this a global phenomenon or is this a Korean part about the security of the femtocells?
Okay, the security of the femtocells. The certificate management part, or I really didn't get the question about.
So I think the question is in general if the sort of configuration is found.
Yes. Yeah. So when I was still in Korea in about 10 years ago, my research team had reported the security of the femtocells even back in then, when the security was quite lax compared to today's standard. But I personally believe that they just patched what we have pulled in 10 years ago, and they might not be updated throughout the modern security standards. And this is unfortunately, I also need to attribute to the standard practices of the Korean small and medium-sized companies. They may not have enough human resources to think about the security implications. And yeah, I might be pessimistic on how the security will be improving in let's say next five years or next decade.
Okay, and then there's another question at microphone one, please.
In the context of the SKT case, you mentioned that the HSS data was found in the management network. Mm-hmm. I wanted to confirm that this was the case. And the actual question is, was SKT asked why this data was in the management network and unencrypted there?
Okay, so the HS data was stored inside the core network, and it was pushed into the management network, and the copying attempt from their management network to the outside world was actually detected by the SK Telecom's firewalls. So that's how they got to know about the breach.
Okay, any further questions? Okay, there's another question, microphone one. Go ahead, please.
So my question is, based on what you said now, they basically did these threat actors, they were into the system for at least 4 years in one mm-hmm. case. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I understand some control failed in telco, so probably they were not monitoring and so. However, once they identified, let's say the attack, they were able to backward look into data mm-hmm. and see that certain data was exfiltrated, when it was exfiltrated, what was the amount. Are there any details, like basically what control failed there? Like they were actually recording data, they had audit log for everything, but they were not looking into it? Or like, do you have any additional information? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. From what we have heard, the KT's femtocell case, they do have a femtocell management system, and the system is supposed to make some alerts. But I don't know the reason because I'm not from KT, so I cannot answer clearly whether it was just ignored by some negligence or it was systematically ignored. But there is a monitoring system, and the monitoring system raises is capable of raising the flags on, let's say, the femtocell was activated in an unexpected area, or new cell ID has been appearing. But I guess that the indicators for the further breaches have been ignored, which led to a long persistent attack.
Okay, I believe there's another question. Microphone two, please.
Yes. My understanding is that there has been no bounties or mm-hmm. such for this research, but it looks like it takes a lot of effort and it's personally stressful or even risky to carry it out. Mm-hmm. So what helps you perform this research?
Okay, in my case, I am a KT's customer since I was still at high school, and my parents and my sister they are still using the KT's users. And I got my PhD on the cellular network security, and KT's breach has been happened. So I acted for myself. I wanted to protect me and my family.
Yeah, for me that when I was thinking that the VLTE is not, I was discovered the VLTE is not wrapped in IPsec of about a year ago, and I think, oh, it is passing through the telco's network, so it will be fine, and I noticed the breach, and suddenly, oh, dang, it is not meant to be that, and that only that from them, I was tried to digging into it and reached here.
Okay, another question at microphone one, please.
Thank you for your talk. In the first case, you mentioned that BPF door was being used for exfil, and it had taken quite a long time to discover the attackers.
Yes.
I have looked into BPF door, and when the story broke earlier this year, I was wondering, well, BPF door is quite easy to detect if you do any kind of host-based monitoring on Linux systems. Now, doing host-based monitoring at scale is actually hard, but I was wondering, did the operator not do any of this, and do you have any insights into that?
Yeah, the operator did, as far as I know, the operator did some in their internal security audit even in 2022 or 2023. But well, as from my understanding, they might have skipped some of the nodes, which turned out to be impacted inside as a BPF door. So yeah, their oversight may have been skipped that they have been being impacted with the BPF door.
So this sounds that they didn't do any continuous security monitoring of the devices.
I cannot say definite answers, but probably.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Okay, we have another question from the internet, please.
One internet user says, if I'm not mistaken, there was a mention of an external clock hooked up to the Femto cell. What was the purpose of that exactly?
That our test setup.
Wait a second.
Thriving IPsec, page 45.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that if it is meant, that it is from our test setup, and since the software radio, the software radio's internal clock is quite unstable so some user equipments are refusing to attach to it, even if it is broadcasting legit signals. So to fix that, we need a more precise clock to feed into the software radio to compensate the clock drift and lock the clock.
Yes, and from our testing experiences, certain baseband manufacturers are much more tolerant into the inaccurate clock, while some baseband manufacturers are not so tolerant in the inaccurate clock. So yeah, to do the similar experiment by yourself, and if you want to go deeper and serious, then we would recommend to have even a basic devices like a GPS DO.
Yeah.
We have another question from the internet.
How possible is it that these issues are present in the other cells as well? In the
Okay. So we try to collect various open source information from various Korean media outlets, and also we try to digest the official government reports regarding the incident. I studied telecommunications, and I tried to match the puzzles between what is vaguely present in the media highlights, and also some keywords of the government press release. And then it was basically finding out the missing puzzles. And throughout the preparing of this presentation, one reporter had been actually contacted us, and a part of this presentation is already on in South Korean media.
Okay, doesn't seem like there are any further questions. Then thank you again for the talk. Give a warm round of applause and have a good day.